I really wanted to scream out loud every time I heard a peal of thunder, and I just had to control myself, but it kept happening over and over all through the program. So I kind of got myself under control. So glad that I was able to do that and to spare you the horror of listening to me scream. This is Lead Stories. And today, well, we finished off yesterday, I should say, the argument or the discussion about what exactly is white supremacy. I think we got a very good and detailed and authoritative response yesterday. Today we're moving on to catch up with where we should be with things current. And I just want to talk about some items in the news. And first up would be a very different tone to how the death of Jeffrey Epstein is being covered. As you know, Jeffrey Epstein was a very high-profile person in the world of finance, and that's a whole different story because pretty soon they should get around to discussing that because it's a major fallacy that he was a very moneyed man. He was a very stolen moneyed man. He ripped off many of his clients and even his friends of hundreds of millions of dollars, and had come under the scrutiny of quite a few different organizations and agencies and entities. He was not, as pure as the driven snow, but as you know, he was found dead in his jail cell at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan, where he was awaiting trial on a lot of charges, a lot of federal charges. It's a federal penitentiary. And he was discovered, I think this was on Saturday morning, last Saturday morning, dead in his cell. And a whole lot of things began after that. Lots and lots of media coverage. But I wondered whether you noticed the same thing I noticed about this media coverage. It is, for one thing, very, very sympathetic, almost in deference to the man, treating him and his life with great care as to not offend anyone. Trying their best, the media organizations are trying their best to basically approach reporting with a clear tone of respect. No funny stuff, no jokes, no nothing like that. It's a very straightforward reporting, and of course, that will change because as soon as a cause of death is determined, there has been no confirmation of the cause of death, only cause and manner of death. Only so far they have confirmed that he has died, and with certain aspects to the death that require further investigation and confirmation. So I guess everybody's waiting for that. I'm not waiting for that. It's not what Jeffrey Epstein's world was, certainly not my world. But there are several things that are still of interest to me about this death. That would include especially some of the people who were in his circle. And some of the stories that have been lingering around them, revolving around them for a very long time without any resolution. And so we will get to that as soon as, I guess, there is definitive and declarative statement from the medical examiner as to cause and manner of death. The implication is that they want to clear up the question as to whether he actually hanged himself in his jail cell, or whether the injuries to and around his neck area indicate that he was strangled. So that is going to be a big resolution. But I wondered whether what you picked up or have picked up so far, if you're following that story, what have you noticed about the tone of coverage, and what do you think it signifies? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's see if we can figure this out. What is the tone, if you've been following the story, what have you gathered as the approach, the general approach of the media with regard to Jeffrey Epstein's death? Is it something that concerns you, or is it a story that you want to know more about? What is the news value of this story? You will tell me, and then we'll move on to subject number two. I haven't been following it religiously, very, very closely, but close enough, and I have enough information from my perspective of what interests me about his death. I wondered what you picked up from the tone of coverage generally. Loki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
And salutations to you and the beloved community.
Thank you. Recall, same to you.
Does everybody recall Osama bin Laden's burial at sea?
Yes.
Okay. This is all a bunch of flim-flam. And I'm watching the Jimmy Dore show, and one of his panelists, a lady named Stephanie, said, is it possible that he's still alive? And I think it's...
Oh, you too. Are you there? Are you joining the pack, wondering if he's still alive?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, when there's money and power involved, he's probably back on his island. He's probably been spirited back to his little island there. And,
the flag on his island is flying at half staff. He is, after all, the owner of the island, and I guess it's a nod to his ownership of the island that the executive in chief has died. So the flag on the island is flying at half staff today.
Well, his next island neighbor, Richard Branson, may spot him, you know, with his binoculars one of these days. But, you know, there are theories that he could have got a face job, et cetera. But the thing is, where there's money and power involved, anything's possible. And so instead of killing their good friend, who are they? The president, former President Clinton. These are good buddies of his. I'm sure they could have arranged it. Come on.
But that is really not fair. And I'll tell you why. I mean, it sounds innocuous, but it isn't. You're essentially leveling a charge of murder at people without having any indication at all that they had anything to do with the death of Jeffrey Epstein.
I apologize.
You should refrain from doing that.
I apologize for that. Although ex-President Clinton has been on the flight log of the Lolita Express 24
yes.
times, even though he claims
yes,
it's 4
times. That doesn't mean he's involved in murder just because he's on the manifest.
No, I'm still punching below the belt. I apologize. But, yeah, the other thing is just pure conjecture that Mr. Epstein is still alive. Pure conjecture on my part. But I got the idea from a panelist on the Jimmy Dore show. Then Jimmy Dore is like Jon Stewart, except he doesn't have someone lauding over him, telling him what to do. He broadcasts from his garage, so his agenda is the truth, which is the best definition of a progressive person, seeking the truth.
All right. Well, thank you for getting us started today. Sasha from L.A., you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Utrice. Thank you
Hello.
For taking my call. I was following a few days ago a very intense intensely some of the reporting. Well, right away, all I saw so far, I mean, maybe there's been something else in the last couple of days. All I've seen so far is one still photo shot of allegedly Epstein's corpse being wheeled out on a gurney, and the face part is partially blocked. It's not cropped, but it's like blocked. And if you just look at what can be seen, you can see the guy's profile of his nose and one of his ears, his left ear, and there's a side-by-side profile with Epstein. It's absolutely not Epstein. There's no way that that's a person that is purported to be Epstein's dead body on a gurney. That's not him. So who is it? You know, to me, it just raises all kinds of questions. I'm not saying who, you know, we can all imagine who might benefit by murdering him, but who might benefit by...
Well, how do you know he's murdered? You see, this is the whole thing.
Right.
We have no definitive proof of anything.
He's even dead. I believe he's alive. He's very much possibly alive. But, the media...
Why do you choose to say he's alive when we have reports, allegedly, from medical examiners indicating that he is in fact dead? They have performed a post-mortem. They have reported partially on the results, the most important one being that they've confirmed that he has died. Now, why in the face of that would you insist he's not dead?
Well,
what do you know that we don't know?
Okay, well, I don't know anything for certain, but I have seen that in the past, medical examiners are not exempt from corruption. I'm not saying Kennedy's alive, but I'm saying the autopsy reports were completely doctored.
Yes, but we don't know. You know? This is the thing. You know, when
right, we don't know.
And a lot of conjecture, and it's being relayed as fact. We got to be very careful about these things.
But the United States mainstream media is complicit in, you know, there's some kind of policy of, we don't show dead bodies that have been blown apart in the media. You can find photos of things like that on the internet, you know, like people blown up in war, you know, and things like that. Not that I want to see it, but it's like, well, it kind of shows for certain if somebody is dead, you can kind of see
it in
the picture.
But that's also the matter of, you know, there are standards. There are standards in any industry as to what they consider to be beyond the pale. Showing the ghastly remains of a person, a dead body, is considered beyond the pale. So industry
when it's a high profile thing, and there's a big question of, is this really the truth? If there's really a standard of truth, and that's part of the truth, you know, then you show the truth. You show
goodness, we're being assailed by conspiracy theorists today. What's going on?
Well, no, come on, listen. Like, you know, like,
about the tone of coverage and how it differs from coverage of even somebody with a high profile. A newspaper or television station or cable news would typically cover it. But if you see any departure from the norm, that's where I thought we were going with this. But so far, everybody is deep into conspiracy theories.
Okay. Well, here's one other thing that caught my attention very strongly. I didn't hear anything about another property. Okay, we heard about the island. We heard about his mansion in Manhattan. Have you heard anywhere in the mainstream media about a 10,000-acre property in New Mexico that belongs to Epstein?
Well, that is supposed to be, he supposedly has a very large real estate portfolio. So we'll get to know.
This place is called Zorro Ranch in Stanley, New Mexico. And there's only one video I saw about it, and it was just made like a few days ago. it's astounding that how could this be not even known in the media? Look, I didn't know about it. How is this surfacing all of a sudden? Anyway, the so-called news outfit that put together this media, this 1 hour plus video that you can find on YouTube, basically, you know, they're obviously kind of a right-wing fundamentalist religious type organization, but they're doing some interesting reporting. They got footage that's obviously generous amount of footage, like from drone coverage and from handheld walk around on this property.
You're not questioning that. You're questioning the other media. The point is, at this point, we should concede that we don't know very much. We only know some very basic facts. He supposedly hanged himself. There is a question as to whether that in fact did happen or whether he was strangled. And beyond that, we don't know very much. So we'll wait and see.
The one picture that I've seen in the media that's supposed to be him, it's obviously not him. So if he's really dead, if there's been an autopsy, they should show.
No, it's obvious because, again,
you do know that
there are talented people in media who can make things look very much unlike what they really are. Computer graphics and computer capability, we shouldn't hang with any particular theory. I wasn't even prepared to discuss the specifics of whether he's dead or not, or whether he was strangled or whether he hanged himself, because I will wait and see what the official reports say. I was wondering, though, whether people noted any difference in the tone of coverage and in the way the subject is being treated, and any ideas as to why. Thanks for calling in and contributing.
Thank you.
Chris from West Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrecht. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
Very well. Thank you.
Oh, okay, good. The media coverage is a joke. They have to cover it because it is high profile, but I feel from the first time he supposedly attempted suicide, they've been laying down a case for incompetence. And it just seems like that's the easiest thing that people will believe, that, he committed suicide. He was able to commit suicide because of the incompetence of the people in the facility in which he was being kept. But obviously, it looks, smells, and feels very funny, which is why you're getting everyone offering their own theories on the matter.
Yes. Theories about.
Correct. And I have my own as well. But to stick to your point about the media, and I just heard you say you'll wait for the official story. The official story is almost never the truth. And that goes from 9/11 to Gulf of Tonkin to the Lusitania to all these different, events that have happened. The official story, we always find out later on, is a lie. Like, we're still...
Okay, but what might be the reason that there are all these different and conflicting stories when it comes to Epstein's death? What might be the reason for it?
Well, clearly he's tied into a lot of important people, even beyond the current.
Excellent. That's great, even beyond
the current president and the former president, because they just look like middle managers to me at this point. They don't look like true power brokers.
So you have here, this is no ordinary death, in other words.
Yeah, correct.
This is not an ordinary death. And
correct.
This
and
person, Epstein, is at the center of a lot of other things, very, very newsworthy things that we have yet to know. So we don't know the full extent of his his realm of influence. We don't know the extent of it. So we don't know who's likely to pop up as somebody in that realm close to him, and how and why they're there or have been there in that realm. So he's a very newsworthy, very interesting person. And that is why people are, you know, they're dancing, but not too dangerously for now. They're waiting to make connections.
But, and we know that they won't, because they, and it seems as if they want to paint Epstein as the head of the snake. So it's kind of like, oh, Epstein is dead, so, you know, we'll just get his associates, some of his low-level associates, and, you know, we'll try to, you know, we'll try to get to the bottom of this. But the media showed O.J. Simpson at a slow roll back in the 90s, you know. They raided his island the other day. No real coverage of it from any of the mainstream sources. As the gentleman before me called, mentioned, his property in New Mexico. I don't think that they necessarily needed him to talk, because as we know from the several reports that are out there by the Mint Press News and the lady down in the Miami Herald, who is doing a lot of this reporting, that place was filled with cameras and surveillance and all this other stuff. So I don't necessarily think they needed Epstein to necessarily talk.
Because I will tell you, the story isn't even nearly told. Of course, his death is newsworthy, very newsworthy. But what is coming up next, or the things that they're looking for and looking at, is just what was his world? Who was in it? How did they function in this world? Who was making money? Because you have the confluence, you have the overlapping of several systems here. You have Wall Street, you have the real estate world, you have the world of fame, the Hollywood mafia,
entertainment, media. Well, here's the thing. Why don't we see any reporters banging on Wexner's door asking him, you know, why were you so close to him and you felt so comfortable to give him planes and the penthouse in Manhattan for such a low amount of money? You know,
and
he was managing
$400 million, in excess of $400 million. So we have the angle developing of a kind of super Madoff. Money laundering and all this kind of stuff to the tune of possibly billions of dollars. A guy who really had no credentials, had billionaires for clients. What was this world all about? And how far did it extend? You know,
we know
he owns property in the Caribbean. Where else did he own property, and where did the money go? Where did the money come from, and where did it go? So this story is really just developing. I was hoping you would see, even from the beginning, the media really softballing the story in order to keep some kind of a window open to sources. They don't want to do the kind of reporting that will alienate the sources.
Well, keep in mind, you know, a lot of the people that he dealt with, you know, are people who are owners of these conglomerates or sit on these boards of all of these media conglomerates. And we know that the Mossad, that, you know, his friend Maxwell, you know, her dad was part of a ranking official in the Mossad. So, I mean, this thing goes international. It's beyond even just America. You know, this is a wide-ranging thing, and we know it's all about obtaining dirt and catching people in compromising positions so that you can get things done in the manner in which you want them done.
Is why we have to take note and be a little patient to see how the media are moving with the story and why. We're seeing already that they're being very careful. They're not being reckless. They're not making bizarre charges. They're just reporting, in a kind of factual way, except the one story I saw today talked about how the blood cells and the blood vessels in his eyes popped. Well, what do you expect?
That's what I'm saying.
This is what typically happens. But they are trying not to go too fast on this one, because there is so much to cover, much ground to cover with the story. Thanks for calling in. Thank you. 888-874-4888. The next thing I want to talk about is something that should concern you. Our former president, Barack Obama, is having a little problem, it seems, in Chicago with the monument he intends to build to himself. Some local groups, exactly five of them, the nonprofits and the community-based groups, are questioning why he is being allowed to proceed with his plan to build the Obama Presidential Center. Now, it sounds like a nice, compact building, but it's not just a small, compact building. It takes up several acres in the historic area, and the people have been asking for the project to go through the normal procedure, which is it should be evaluated by the community should have a say, and in order for them to have a say, certain questions and issues have to be asked and resolved. One is, a chief complaint they have is that the project has not sufficiently explained how this project will neatly mesh with the historic community on the lake. It's a very impressive monument, but it's supposed to go through a process. It's supposed to have issues resolved from the very beginning, and they have had some issues to resolve. They are concerned about the impact on the density of the community in terms of traffic. They're concerned about the number of trees and so forth, the ecological issues that still have to be resolved. They're concerned about how they intend to mitigate some of these problems, but they haven't gotten any answers from the project. Now comes the recently elected new mayor of Chicago, and the community is saying, that she is actually green-lighting this project. As a former supporter of the president when he was running for president, and she is helping the project to bypass a lot of these procedures in order to give it a quick green light and to get this $500 million project on the way. So she denies that. She says she has no such role, and she is in favor of the community having its say and the authority of review, but we don't know. It's a three-part process that they have. You're supposed to figure out how to fix the problems that communities are raising, saying this is going to be, if this is not done, they will not be in favor of this project. How do you address the concerns of the community? None of this is happening, they allege. And now they're saying that the mayor, in an underhanded way, is helping the project bypass the legitimate process. What do you say should happen? should this be insisted upon, and should it be open? Should the community people who object, who have specific objections, I don't think that they're saying no, they don't want it at all, but they do have concerns. And to just dismiss them and say, well, you know, we want to get on with the project, so let's go. You're holding up the works. There are so many benefits that this project can have. But of course, we know benefit number one is that Barack Obama will get a $500 million monument to himself. What say you about the position of the community on this? And how far should they go? Should they go all the way with this? Or should they try to settle? 888-874-4888. Ron from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon to you.
I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm hanging in.
I understand. The lightning. The thunder.
No lightning. That may come later on tonight.
Well, you know, Orlando is the lightning capital of the world. So before I address the current question, very briefly, I want to say that the earlier caller, Moki, did not accuse two presidents of murdering Jeffrey Epstein. His suggestion was that they helped him in a cover-up of, you know, they helped him escape. That was, I think, Moki's suggestion. The way the press is kid-gloving, so far as you can see, the way they seem to be prepared to kid-glove Epstein, I think is connected with their cooperation in his attempt to whitewash himself as a philanthropist. So going on to, if you don't want to react to that, I'll go on to the current topic.
Oh, well, I mean, he did give some money away. They all have to protect their cover by doing, from time to time, legitimate things. So there is a record of legitimate gifting he has done in his lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Well, the media, who takes their scripts directly from the military-industrial complex, went right along with this, you know, they were friendly to his attempt to whitewash himself. So my comment on the new topic is that, from what I understand, the president could nix this larger project for the library through the EPA. But I'm betting that he won't. And
you're talking about Trump, right?
Yes, the current president wants a bigger compound. So he's not going to nix Obama's plans. But I think that the community should use every bit of leverage that they can. As I said, there's an EPA consideration, but the, you know, the president, he is the EPA, if you want to, you know.
Yes.
There's
some notion here that the objection really isn't so much to the monument itself, to the park itself, but to the fact that it is to honor the first black president of the United States, and people are having psychological problems with that.
Oh, I thought it was just about the acreage, about this really prime real estate that he's just eating up, gobbling up to,
yes,
you know, to effect his plan to have this very super. So they, I mean, they could still honor him with a statue on a smaller piece of land. So,
but he has raised the money. He raised the bulk of the money to build this park, and it's not just a building; it's about some other things attached. There's a music center. There are other projects associated with it, but in all, it's a huge undertaking, gobbling up a lot of land, prime real estate on the lake. So there you go, for a black president. Put it all together, you'll get a lot of people who are sour.
Well, Eutrice, it's not just the money. I see a connection here to the super gentrification of parts of Manhattan, including Harlem.
Okay. Well, this is legitimate. But do you believe, how do you believe this should be handled? Because right now we're getting, you know, headbutting going on and no movement. But now it's been compounded by the fact that the mayor is involved, and now she is being accused of secretly trying to push to ram this through, even if it flouts the legal process that she wants this done. And there's, you know, there's no patience with the community input, community oversight, community opinion. Let's get rid of all of that and move to the end and start this project getting it built.
My opinion is that she's been prepaid for her actions, and the only way to circumvent it. Oh, and
she's been prepaid.
Yeah, prepaid. You know, in other words, arrangements were made, understandings were achieved. The only way around to circumvent this is the people right on the street. Is the citizen involved directly who will be impacted one way or another by this nice little land grab?
All right. So, what do you hope? What is the best outcome here, in your view?
Oh, that the thing is just simply handled by the correct agencies on wishful thinking and downsized. You shouldn't get such a big theme park. That's what he wants, is a theme park. And like I said, the president could nix it, could put the kibosh on it, but Trump wants a bigger one. So he's not going to discourage anybody.
All right. I think you have a point there. Thanks a lot for contributing today. 888-874-4888. We move on to the next topic. So the number is now 123. That's the number of legislators who have signed on to the inquiry to impeach the president. This is not the actual impeachment of the president. It goes through a process. This is the first stage of the process. And they have to get a simple majority, more than 50% of the House's 435 members, to agree to undertake a formal process of impeachment. So two more Democrats joined. They hopped on the impeachment bus yesterday. That's Ro Khanna of California and Deb Haaland of New Mexico. They have signed on to it, bringing the number to 123, which of course means it still has a way to go. But what do you think the chances are of this measure succeeding? Do you think they will get their majority to begin the formal process of sending it to the Senate, saying, we are voting for impeachment of this president? It sounds like, you know, they have such a long way to go, but not really, considering that they really just started aggressively putting the matter before members of the House. Do you think that this would actually lead to impeachment? Is there impeachment in the president's future? Yes or no? Khalil from South Carolina, yes or no?
But
hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, actually, the first thing I want to say is, like, yesterday's show was 5-star, and
well, thank you. I give it all to Jeff Perry, and of course, the topic was delivered very nicely. He can be depended on at all times to do that, which is why I call him. I need historical analysis.
Wow, yeah, that was a wow show program. Okay, so, you know, I don't think that's the goal for Nancy Pelosi, and she's the gatekeeper. I think that they won't go to full impeachment, but I think the goal is to put as much information out in the public sphere to sway opinion against this current regime, so that the votes turn in necessary districts, so that there's no reelection of this disgusting regime that we have now.
Do you think they're doing enough of a PR effort? Do you think they're being a little bit lacking in that department? This is an issue that should be, I mean, we should see news releases flying all over the place. We should see news conferences being held to update people, to give them a sense that, you know, we're moving on this. But instead, it's like you're wondering, is it on or is it off?
It's a very anemic effort.
I like that word. Anemic is, in fact, a very good word.
That's the way it appears. Come on. Anyone who's conscious, if you're a person of conscience, a sentient person, there's so much fodder here that you can work with. I don't know what are they afraid of? You know, what are they afraid of? And the mental illness component, there's so many components now. It's just, you know, stop. Just stop with your silliness.
The Democrats also are dealing with a problem of fragmentation of leadership. And it is not easy to say that, you know, there's enough support so that people are coming together as one. There's no such thing right now in the Democratic Party. There's no unity.
That's our problem. As a matter of fact, I was reading in one of the newspapers, I won't say the newspaper, but now because of Trump's tweets, now Ms. Tlaib and Omar, they're not going to be allowed to go to Israel.
Up for discussion. They want to make some drama about it. So they haven't made a firm decision about it.
Okay. Well, I mean, come on. I mean, Benjamin came over here, unannounced and inappropriate.
You know what that is.
I hate to
go
there.
But also, you know, we have to take a look at this. I've remarked about it before, and I think some people were uncomfortable about my position. Mm-hmm. And I pointed specifically at Ilhan.
Mm-hmm.
I admire the fact that they are very enthusiastic as newbies. They're taking direct responsibility and quickly for the areas of interest that they have. However, I don't think they're thinking very strategically about it.
I
think they're putting themselves in harm's way, and I think that they're not framing their positions very well. And mm-hmm. they're not taking the time to understand the full breadth of the ramifications of hasty decisions and reckless actions.
May I ask you a question about Omar in particular?
Yes. Yes.
I'm now getting the feeling that that either she's not cognizant of the repercussions of her actions, verbally, physically, et cetera, or she is really setting herself up to be a martyr.
Well, there's another possibility. She is being guided by people. And these are not really her particular priorities and concerns, although, of course, she would be very much interested in moving in a particular direction. But there's a question in my head as to where is her political direction coming from? It is not from her. I'm all but positive about that, certain about that, that there is a question about who is advising her? because I can't imagine anybody being so casual and giving advice and having her, you know, basically go along with it, or in fact sharing in that kind of decision without really understanding what is at stake. And I had remarked, as you know, I talked about this a long time ago.
Yes. You were the one who pointed out, and that's what I'm saying. She's being very cavalier about her very existence on this planet.
Yeah, so we'll see. Okay. Well, okay. So, to sum up your point, what would you say? So we can move on to the very last one.
Okay. So I would say Speaker Pelosi has already determined that for whatever reason, there's not enough time, or they're just too lazy or too scared to bring up, and start impeachment proceedings. So they're using the impeachment investigation to bring up all, you know, for lack of a better term, dirt, you know, all these negative attributes of this regime that we're dealing with to sway the vote. But, I'm of the opinion that, you know, sometimes you have to, when you're on salary, sometimes days are easy and sometimes they're hard. And sometimes you have to have 12-hour days. They could do this. They have aides. They could really do this.
I think they can do it. I'm a bit disturbed at the fact that the leader of the Democratic Party is being so intransigent about it that she almost is getting in the way of it, sabotaging the effort by making her objections so widely and loudly known. I wish the Democratic Party could get its act together and decide that this is not something that can be undertaken by a bunch of people. You have to have cohesion, you have to have strategy, and you have to, this is the perfect tool to reach out to the community with. You have to have community presence to carry your message. At the same time, I think Gerald Nadler, who is heading up this effort, is being quite aggressive and quite persistent. Mm-hmm. And I think the intention was for him to fail before he even got off the ground. But he has remained steadfast, and he's seeing some kind of leeway. And hopefully it would result, he would achieve his objective, hopefully.
Thanks so much for calling.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, he's gone.
What is Speaker Pelosi scared of? Is she a surfer waiting for the perfect wave to come?
We don't know, except that she's about to, you know, she's retirement age. This is a time when people look to, you know, put all the bells and whistles in order for when they retire. She also is, by saying she's opposed, she's carving out her own individual power. This is a very interesting thing to notice. She does not always speak for the Democratic Party, if you notice.
That's what I'm saying, Patrice. She's kind of leaning toward the corporate model at this point, because if you can't impeach this entity, this disgusting bipedal, this regime, now what are you going to impeach someone over?
Well, she wouldn't care very much because she'll soon be gone. She is trying to make as smooth of an exit as possible, and amass as much power and influence as possible, so that even when she's gone, a phone call will do the trick to get done whatever it is she needs to get done as a consultant, as many people become, or as a bona fide political entity in her own right. So far, she has achieved, against many odds, what people didn't predict. They did not predict that a woman would lead the party, and she does.
I see your point. I see your point now. She does. Okay, so she's keeping her cards close to her vest because, like you said, she did the unthinkable. She's become a speaker again as a woman, a powerful woman, and she doesn't want a black mark. She doesn't want to bow with a black mark against her. Okay,
absolutely
I understand
not.
That. I understand. Okay. But you know, this bleeds over into what the Democrats are doing now. We are set up to fail if you're a Democrat. This is not going to work. This Moran circus.
But we see signs that there is some light at the end of the tunnel, and it really isn't an oncoming train. It really is a light. And some people are working very hard because the combination of the nature of the times that we're in and the rotten leadership we have had in this country, people are clamoring for anything that looks like a reasonable and sane answer.
Well,
so this is a great time of opportunity if they look at it the right way.
If they really tune
into the people, get into the community.
This is why I really feel, because now we see that I don't think Joe Biden has the stamina. I mean, for a lot of reasons, I'm not going to get into it because I know you want to move on. But I see the Bernie Warren ticket. That's going to end up being the ticket.
I just like to wait and see. Because you never know.
Thank you, Utrecht. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. I'm going to ask you one question and see where you go on this one. And that is this. Where do I have? Let's see. An easy one. We have the issue here of, it's an issue I've talked about many, many times, and it concerns institutions like the Catholic Church and the Boy Scouts of America. We find that the position of prosecutors across the country, it seems, they prefer to settle these matters. They prefer to encourage that these issues be settled out of court rather than go to trial. Now, in some cases, that might be a workable idea. It saves a lot of time. It saves a lot of money in terms of legal costs and so forth. But the issue we're looking at is, why do these institutions in particular, why do they get this benefit? And is it justice to encourage people to settle child sex abuse cases or any kind of case on an institutional level when you have such appalling evidence that shows that these sex attacks not only are occurring at alarming rates within these institutions, but the institutions themselves are getting a nice fat break, and the people who really ought to be put on trial and put behind bars also are getting a break, and nobody is deciding what do these young people deserve in terms of protection and a defense from the state. But we're running out of time. We've run out of time, so we tackle this, and I have several other questions to deal with. Tomorrow bring Free Your Mind Friday. Of course, it makes a good combination, so I get to ask a couple of these questions while we listen to your opinion on diverse matters. But this is a particularly troublesome issue for me. I think it is so wrong. And I think the only way to have an impact on this runaway phenomenon of negotiating settlements when there should be no negotiation whatsoever? And should we be as drastic as insisting that any institution that presents the kinds of facts and figures that we have come to know in terms of the enormous problem that it is, perhaps we should consider shutting down some churches where it's prevalent, shutting down the Boy Scout troops where you find it most prevalent, and go beyond the business of tidying it up with, you know, cozy little settlements, and then people go on, but these children are scarred for life. So we have to deal with that. Thanks so much for listening today. There's no lightning yet, so I'm grateful I don't have to muffle my screams. I could actually do my program today. Thank you so much. It's such a joy being in your midst and being, sharing your ideas and your opinions. I really, really cherish that. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Get your opinions and your brains working for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.